take our Bibles. We're going to look at two passages tonight, two passages, Mark chapter 8, 1 Corinthians chapter 5. Mark chapter 8, 1 Corinthians chapter 5. A couple weeks ago in Sunday school class, Mr. Edwards revealed something to us, and those of us that went on the Israel trip, I thought this was good. He mentioned, he asked the teenagers what the problem is with an archaeologist's job, knowing Eitan, or what's his name again? I can't remember. What's that? Paul? Oh, no. But what's the problem with an archaeologist's job is it always ends in ruins. They didn't get it either. The teenagers didn't laugh. Mr. Edwards was, thank you. I got one. I knew I'd get one there. I knew I'd get one. Appreciate that. But then this morning, we are mentioning to the teenagers some oxymorons. And that's fitting for teenagers right there. Just many morons are up there, so we just figured we'd put oxy with it. You know, I mean, oxy and moron, zit morons, I guess, or something like that. But we went through a couple of them, and all right, we know pretty ugly, right? That's two words put together that don't really shouldn't fit. Pretty ugly. We figured Jacob was right in front of me, Jacob Martin. And we made up our own right then. We said Jacob Smart. I mean, that's an oxymoron right there. And then Seth Bollinger happened to be sitting there. We said Seth Strong. All right, that was an oxymoron. There's lots of them that you come up with. We said and I thought this one, and the teenagers didn't get it. Rap music. They didn't get it. All right, all the bus teams are like, ooh. All right, it's like, wow, get it. Rap music. I thought this one was fitting. Microsoft Works. Yeah. Those of us that have been on planes, airline food. I don't think that's true. And then I thought this was fitting. Government organization. Yes. We always have one that we have to mention. There was a husband. He went in to see his doctor, and he said, "Doctor, you got to examine my wife. I think it finally happened. I think her mind's finally gone." Doctor looked and said, "What? Talking about? You sure about that?" He said, "Well, it's got to be. She's been giving me a piece of it every day for 20 years." I thought it could be possible. But we wanted to give a little story. There's, you know, the ant and the grasshopper. The ant works hard in the withering heat all summer long. He's building his house and laying up supplies for the winter. Grasshopper thinks the ant is a fool. Laughs, dances, plays all summer long, and he withers his summer away. Come wintertime, the ant is warm, well-fed. Grasshopper has no food or shelter, and so he dies out in the cold. And the moral of the story is, be responsible for yourself. But there's a modern version, and I thought I'd share that tonight. The ant works hard in the withering heat, rain, all summer long, building his house, laying up supplies for the winter. The grasshopper thinks the ant is a fool, laughs, dances, and plays the summer away. Come wintertime, the shivering grasshopper calls a press conference, demands to know why the ant should be allowed to be warm and well-fed while he is cold and starving. CBS, NBC, PBS, CNN, and ABC show up to provide picture of the shivering grasshopper next to a video of the ant in his comfortable home with a table filled with food. America is stunned by the sharp contrast. How can this be? In a country of such wealth, this poor grasshopper is allowed to suffer so. Kermit the Frog appears with Oprah, with the grasshopper, and everybody cries when they sing, "It's not easy being green." Acorn stages a demonstration in front of the ants' house where the news stations film the group singing, "We Shall Overcome." Then Reverend Jeremiah Wright has the group kneel down to pray for the grasshopper, and that the rotten American capitalists who caused this should, and then they had to bleep out the rest of it. The political left condemned the ant, blamed President Bush, President Reagan, Christopher Columbus, and the Pope for the grasshopper's plight. Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid exclaim in an interview with Larry King Live that the ant has gotten rich off the back of the grasshopper, and both call for an immediate tax hike on the ant to make him pay his fair share. Finally, the EEOC draft the Economic Equity and Anti-Grasshopper Act, retroactive to the beginning of the summer. The ant is fined for failing to hire a proportionate number of green bugs when he built his house, and he's left to pay his retroactive taxes. His home is confiscated because he can't by the government green czar and given to the grasshopper. The story ends as the grasshopper and his freeloading friends finish up the last bits of the ant's food, while the government house he is in, which, as you recall, just happens to be the ant's old house, crumbles around them because the grasshopper doesn't feel like maintaining it. The ant has disappeared in the snow, never to be seen again. The grasshopper is found dead in a drug-related incident, and the house, now abandoned, is taken over by a gang of spiders who terrorize the ramshackle, once prosperous and once peaceful neighborhood. The entire nation collapses, bringing the rest of the free world within it to an end. The moral of the story? Be careful who you vote for. All right? Mark chapter 8, 1 Corinthians chapter 5. First of all, Mark chapter 8. We're starting verse 13. Verse 13. "And he left them, and entering into the ship again, departed to the other side. Now the disciples had forgotten to take bread. Neither had they in the ship with them more than one loaf. And he charged them, saying, 'Take heed, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and of the leaven of Herod.' And they reasoned among themselves, saying, 'It is because we have no bread.' And when Jesus knew it, he saith unto them, 'Why reason ye because ye have no bread? Perceive ye not yet, neither understand? Have ye your heart yet hardened? Having eyes, see ye not? And having ears, hear ye not? And do ye not remember? When I break the five loaves among 5,000, how many baskets full of fragments took ye up?' They said unto him, 12. And when the seven among 4,000, how many baskets full of fragments took ye up? And they said, 7. And he said unto them, 'How is it that ye do not understand?'" We go back in this passage and we're looking at the verse in verse 15. "And he charged them, saying, 'Take heed, beware the leaven of the Pharisees and of the leaven of Herod.'" 1 Corinthians 5 now. 1 Corinthians 5. Read verse 6 and 7. 1 Corinthians, in this passage, it's talking about some sin that has entered into the Church of Corinth. The Church of Corinth, when you study it, was a prosperous town, but it was a very wicked town. In fact, most believe that to be called a Corinthian was a slam in itself. If you came by and said you're a Corinthian, you were automatically saying someone was immoral. That's how wicked the town was. And so immorality came into the Church of Corinth, and Paul was writing the Church of Corinth, telling them how to deal with, how to take care of the problem, how to do church discipline. In 1 Corinthians 5 and verse 6, he says, "Your glorying is not good. Know ye not that a little leaven leaveneth the whole lump? Purge out therefore the old leaven, that ye may be a new lump as ye are unleavened. For even Christ our Passover is sacrificed for us." I'm going to read one more verse, and you don't have to turn to it. I think we've heard this verse. Song of Solomon chapter 2 and verse 15 says, "Take us the foxes, the little foxes that spoil the vines, for our vines have tender grapes." Tonight I want to talk about little things. Do little things matter? Do little things matter? I think most of us, when we would talk or think about countries, normally we think or of society, we think of the biggest nations, all right? China, I forgot how many billion people they have, but China is a massive country. But normally we don't think of the smallest country, all right? The smallest country is Vatican City, all right? It occupies 0.2 acres, all right? And it is its own country. Most of the time when someone says, yeah, we are, we think of something huge and big, you know, we've got the biggest army. All right, normally we don't, when somebody comes by and they have 12, they got 12 soldiers. Like, we're going to take you. All right, and you're inside your castled walls and there's 12 people out there. Like, whoa, wow, are you sure? Oh, all right. And so normally we want to think of a massive army coming. We're not really scared of little things. But the Bible warns us here, Jesus in Mark chapter 8, he warned the disciples and said, hey, beware of the leaven. And leaven, we know it's just some small thing. But it can get inside something and expand it to where it's large. And that's what happened in 1 Corinthians. He said, wait a minute, you've got to get out that old leaven. You've got to get it out of there because it will expand and fester. It will ruin things. That's what Solomon in Song of Solomon was saying. Take us the foxes, the little foxes that spoil the vine. We have to be careful. Many of us have climbed Long's Peak. And on the top of Long's Peak, there is a 400-year-old tree, but it's just in remains now. It was a giant tree, they believe. But age and storm and avalanches, it endured all those things. But what brought that tree down? A tiny beetle. A tiny beetle that we could crush under our foot. It ate right through the bark and devoured the heart of that tree, so that it is just in remains today. It brought that tree down, a little beetle. Do little things count? I want to mention just a couple of things tonight as we consider, do little things count? First of all, there is a danger of little sins. There is a danger in little sins. Let's turn to Genesis chapter 34 and we see the story of Joseph. In Genesis 34, I'm sorry, Genesis 37. Genesis 37. We see that the story of Joseph, and in verse 3 it says, Israel loved Joseph more than all his children because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a coat of many colors. And notice the progression here in verse 4. It starts with jealousy. When his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him and could not speak peaceably unto him. Notice that there's a jealousy that stirs up. Why? Because their father gave him a coat of many colors, gave Joseph. Then we see in verse 18 that it progresses more because here Joseph is at home and his older brothers are away taking care of the herd and the flock. And in verse 18, when they saw him afar off, even before he came near unto them, what did they do? They conspired now. They let a jealousy turn into a hatred and hatred to conspiracy. And then in verse 20, what did they decide to do? Come now, therefore, and let us slay him. It progressed, this little jealousy progressed so far that now they were willing to commit murder. Against their brother. Why? Because of a coat? A coat of many colors? We have to be careful of little sins. Psalm chapter 19 tells us. This is talking, some of it is talking about the Word of God. Verse 11, we read these and we talk about the Word of God. The law of the Lord is perfect. The statutes of the Lord in verse 8 are right. The fear of the Lord is clean. Verse 10, more to be desired are they than gold. Verse 11, moreover, by them are they servants warned. But look at verse 12. Who can understand his errors? Cleanse thou me from what? Secret faults. Secret sins. In Psalm 90 and verse 8. Psalm 90. And verse 1, it says, Lord, thou hast been our dwelling place in all generations. Before the mountains were brought forth, it's talking about the majesty of God. And then in verse 8, thou hast set our iniquities before thee, our secret sins, in the light of thy countenance. Hey, there is a danger of little sins. We have to be careful. Remember, Jesus in the gospel said, hey, that which is done in secret will be shouted from the housetops, from the mountaintops. We have to be careful of letting the devil come in and say, hey, that's just a little one. Oh, it's just a little thing. You can let it go. You've worked so hard. But all of us would say, hey, you know what? We may not be much in God's eyes or in the world's eyes, but we are much as far as our soul is much. And what if somebody would have said that about our soul? What if somebody wouldn't have told you about Christ and they said, oh, that's just a little one? Is that why we work so hard on Sundays? We work and we have a push and we do all kinds of work and we spend all kinds of money making these little passports and buying gimmicks and trying to get little children to come in. Why? So they could just have a good time and go home and just feel a fuzzy feeling inside? No, because we know there is a value in a little soul. But yet when it comes to sin, you say, oh, it's just a little thing. It's just a little thing. It's not that big. And then God comes to you and convicts you of it. And He touches your heart about it. You say, oh, it's just something little. Little sins, we know though, become big ones. Accepting the little misdemeanors today will cause us to accept full-grown sin tomorrow. Think about this just a few years ago. Maybe it was 20 years ago. Maybe 25 years ago. Most would have considered immorality or being unfaithful. They would have thought of it as some terrible sin. But what about today? It seems to be the norm in society. Now when somebody comes, a young woman, and she goes to enter into marriage, and somebody may make some remark or something because she's pure and she's clean. It's looked on and looked down upon. Why? Because she's pure and clean. That's society today. But years ago, that was what everybody desired. Let their daughter to walk down and be pure and clean. We think just, I can remember a couple months ago, I was talking to some of our teenagers and I was telling them, now listen, when I was growing up, on Sundays, almost every grocery store was closed. I'm like, no. I'm like, man, I'm old. And I said, and not just that, I mean, that's why they had liquor stores, because the grocery stores would not sell liquor together. And man, as Christians, we said, yeah, you know what, that's great. But you can't find a grocery store now. None sell liquor. And then I was telling them, well, it was very common. And in fact, man, there was lots of Christians. I can remember growing up, as far as my pastor, he believed this. You know, we wouldn't go to restaurants that served alcohol. Man, it was common. You had restaurants all over that didn't serve alcohol. People would stand, but, all right, go find one now. All right, and think about the things over and over. Think about the things over and over that have just crept in, and we've let the little things, a little thing, and it becomes bigger and bigger in our society to where now you're a man. If you just stand up against any little thing, but yet there's so, I mean, think about what our society okays today. Abortion. I mean, killing a baby. I remember sitting with
a teenager just a couple of weeks ago on Saturday. I was trying to talk to them, and I said, "You're saying it's okay to kill a baby." I said, "You're saying it's okay." I said, "Well, you know, what about the woman?" I said, "What do you mean, what about the woman? What about the child?" And here's a young person that's coming to church on the weekends, but the public school is just pounded and pounded and pounded and pounded for about 14, or maybe it's about 10 years, just pounded them 40 hours a week. And so that now the Bible has no effect on them, to where they would say, "Well, what do you mean? It's just a baby. I mean, what's the big deal?" I remember one time arguing with the kid, and I said, "You know what? I agree with you. I think the parent should have a right until 1 year old to decide whether they want it or not." And they just looked at me. I said, "You know what? I agree." You know what I mean? Because really, the baby comes out and it could just be a bad kid. And so I think you should be able to go in within that first year after having a kid and say, "No, no, no, slice them." They're like, "No, no, no! That's murder!" I said, "And before, it's murder too." But you know what? That's all right. Now we got, then, I mean, and in our society, little things that we've let go. Little things that we let go, and they just have grown and grown and grown and grown. And so we have so many things we have to fight against. That's why we have to watch out for the little sins in our lives. The little sins will grow. We laugh. I've seen parents do this. They laugh at disobedience in a little kid. Like, isn't that cute? No, it's not cute. It's not cute at all. Because that kid someday will be a rebel. He'll rebel against you. And so you laugh at that little sin, that little disobedience. Oh, it's so cute. It's not cute. Because sin is never cute. Disobedience is not cute. And we have to be careful as parents that we don't let those little things get away. The little sins. The poisonous venom of a spider, no larger than a pencil eraser, can kill hundreds of men. In Ecclesiastes 10, it says, "Dead flies cause the ointment of the apothecary to send forth a stinking savor. So doth a little folly him that is in reputation for wisdom and honor." In the history of mankind, men of God have steered far clear of the littlest offenses. Remember Daniel? Oh, come on, Daniel. It's just the king's meat. It's just a meal. Come on, it's just a dinner. It's just lunch. Come on, Daniel. And he stood for it. He stood against it. Or you can even go later in Daniel's life and you can see him. I mean, come on, Daniel. It's just, you can pray silently. Come on, Daniel. Nobody will know. Just stand there. Keep your eyes open. Nobody knows you're praying. "Hi, Lord. How are you doing?" Nobody will know. Come on, Daniel. No, but as he did aforetime, he went on his knees. Open up his doors. And you say, "Come on. Come on, Daniel." What about the three Hebrew children? Out of all the people, see, men of God, through the generations and through the history of mankind, have stood up and said, "I will steer clear of little offenses against my God." There was a man, one of the early Christian church fathers. His name was Martin Arethusa. He was a bishop over a people. And he was put in charge of this people, and he led the group of people that he was in charge of in that city to tear down a temple to a false idol. The Emperor Julian came in and forced the people to rebuild the false temple under threat of death. Meanwhile, this bishop, Bishop Martin, preached against it. They finally took him and they were going to kill him. And this is what they said: "We will spare your life and we will not kill you if you give us a half a shekel towards the temple, I won't do it. And then they said, wait a minute, if you give a half a grain of incense for the altar, you can live. He said, no. He said, I won't give a half a shekel. I won't give a half a grain of incense for the altar. And they delivered him over. They bound him and delivered him over to the children of the city. And they gave him knives to poke at him. And then after that was done, they smeared his body with honey and delivered him to wasps. And he was stung to death and tortured. Over a half a shekel? Over a little grain of incense? But he was scared to offend his God. You see, we think, oh, it's just something small. It's just something little. And what's the big deal about it? Boy, it seems like people get so stirred up here about little things. But little things we know. A little folly. Just let it go. Come on. Don't drive it. And as a parent, as a dad, you've got to make sure to take care of the little things. How many times, Dad, have we heard, have devotions and be there and teach your kids? One of the most exciting things we can do as a dad is sit down with our children and teach them. Guess what? Many sitting here this week, you let it go. And you think it's not going to affect them. Yes, it will. They see you, Dad. And it'll affect them. Little sins become big sins. And then later on in life, they'll say, you know, when it's not a big deal. It's not a big deal to read the Bible. It wasn't a big deal in my home. And we're okay, I guess. No, we're not. Because little sins coming in, and maybe that's the reason why you're not experiencing God's blessing in your home. Maybe that's the reason you're not experiencing God's blessing in your ministry. Because you say, I'm going to cheat a little bit. I'm going to cheat a little bit. No, we've got to be scared of offending our God. Oh, there's a danger of letting little sins go. Then secondly, there's the delay of little things. You know, do you want to know why you do not see God do the big things in your life? Because you haven't learned to handle the little things correctly. You won't see great things until you learn to take care of little things. Acts chapter 24, I was studying this. This was very interesting because in this passage, we see both. We see a positive and a negative together for us about delay. A positive and a negative here. In Acts chapter 24, we see that Paul is being held captive. In verse 23, he commanded a centurion to keep Paul, to let him have liberty, that he should forbid none of his acquaintance to minister or to come unto him. And so here's Paul. He's in captivity in verse 24. And after certain days, when Felix came with his wife, Drusilla, which was a Jewess, he sent for Paul and heard him concerning the faith in Christ. All right, now, let me present or give you a little bit. I thought it was interesting that it says that here is Drusilla that comes. All right, and when you read a little bit about here Felix, all right, Felix and Drusilla was somebody else's wife. And Felix was traveling around the country and he saw Drusilla and he sent somebody to Drusilla and convinced her to leave her husband and come and live with him. All right, so here is Felix living in adultery. And he comes and he says, hey, Paul, come and minister. And here's the positive of it. Look at Paul comes and he reasoned of righteousness. Guess what the second thing was? Temperance. You know what that is? Self-control. Self-control. You know what Paul does right in front of the two people? He preaches against wrong relationship and have self-control and don't take another person's wife. He doesn't hold anything back. Why? Because he doesn't delay in giving the message that God has. He doesn't delay at all. He doesn't say, you know what, I'll do that later. No, he doesn't delay in doing this. And so he comes to Felix and he reasons of righteousness, of temperance, and of judgment to come. And Felix trembled. He preaches so hard at him that inside Felix knows that he's wrong. He has conviction. It's Holy Spirit power. And he says, go thy way for this time. When I have a convenient season, I will call for thee. We see that he calls him again. In verse 26, he calls him back. But nowhere in any history, nowhere do we find that Felix ever repents of his sin. Felix was a wicked man. It said that he had hired an assassin to murder Jonathan, the high priest. He was a wicked man. And then he goes and he takes this another man's wife and brings her down so that he can have this woman. And Paul comes and he knows that, hey, I don't have much time. I'm not going to delay. And he preaches to him and presents the gospel. And he presents to him that it's sin to do what he's doing. And Felix says, you know what? When I have a convenient season, that's the negative. The negative is that he delayed on a decision. And it was never given back. And there are some of us that wait. We wait. We need to take care of those little things now, like they were big things. And then I think God says, remember in the Gospels, God says, hey, if I see you taking care of those little things, then I'll give you more responsibility. Isn't that what we talk to our kids about? We sit there as a dad or a mom and say, son, daughter, you know, your room here, your dresser is just, it's a nightmare. And son, you got to understand, someday, if you want to have great responsibility, son, you've got to straighten the socks. You present it all that way. But then, when God tugs on your heart, and he says, wait a minute, remember that money you had set aside? No, I want it. Well, you know what? God, I'll just give me a couple weeks and I'll take care of that. Well, why don't you get your big voice back? Why don't you be that man again? No, you're acting like that little kid. And then you wonder, man, how come I don't see God's blessings? Because you delay in doing the little things. And when you delay in doing the little things, God's just waiting and he knocks again on your heart. And he convicts you again. And he convicts you again. God's trying. God's trying to get your attention. He's trying to get you to take care of it. Come and do it. Take care of it. And finish that task and do what's necessary to take that sin and get it out of your life. And complete the job. Don't delay in doing the little things, little attitudes. If you practice them often enough, they become a part of you. And that could be good or bad. Little indulgences, though, if you give place to them long enough, they desensitize you to sin. Little wrong thoughts. If you keep dwelling on them, they soon convince you it's true. Little things. There was an article, I think we've used this before. There was a church paper entitled
The name of the article was 32,850 Sermons Later. There was a, in the British Weekly, there was this letter and it went like this. Dear sir, it seems ministers feel their sermons are very important and spend a great deal of time preparing for them. I've been attending church quite regularly for the past 30 years, and I've probably heard 3,000 of them. To my consternation, I discovered that I cannot remember a single sermon. I wonder if a minister's time might be more profitable spent on something else, sincerely. And it signed it. And then for weeks, it went back and forth. Letters to the editor. And then this letter came and ended the discussion. This is what the letter said. Dear sir, I've been married for 30 years. During that time, I've eaten 32,850 dinners, mostly of my wife's cooking. Suddenly, I've discovered that I cannot remember a single menu of a single meal. And yet, I've received nourishment from every single one of them. I have the distinct impression that without them, I would have starved to death a long time ago. It's just a little thing. And a little, don't delay in the little things, because even in the good things, don't delay in it. Take that step of faith. Whatever it may be tonight that God says, hey, you know what? You've been slacking on this. Take that step. Maybe it's just a little step, but take that step and move forward for God. And you know what will happen is God will continually work on your heart and he'll touch your heart again. And maybe next week he'll touch you about something else. And then next week he'll touch you about something else. And all of a sudden, a couple months, you'll look back and you'll say, wow, I used to be way back there. But God has moved you forward. How is it happening? Because I'm not delaying on the little things. But to me, the most exciting thing is that God delights in little things. How do I know that? 1 Kings chapter 17, we read about a man that comes. His name was Elijah. It says, and the word of the Lord came unto him, saying, arise, get thee to Zarephath, which belongeth to Zidon, and dwell there. And behold, I have commanded a widow woman there to sustain thee. So he arose and went to Zarephath. When he came to the gate of the city, behold, the widow woman was there gathering of sticks, and he called to her, and notice what he says, fetch me, I pray thee, a little water in a vessel, that I may drink. And as she was going to fetch it, he called to her and said, bring me, I pray thee, a morsel. What is that? A little piece of bread. And this is what she said, as the Lord thy God liveth, I have not a cake, but an handful of meal in a barrel and a little oil in a cruse. And behold, I am gathering two sticks that I may go in and dress it for me and my son, that we may eat it and die. Elijah said unto her, fear not, go and do as thou hast said, but make me thereof a little cake first and bring it unto me. And after, make for thee and for thy son. And notice what he says. And if you'll do that, the barrel of meal shall not waste. Neither shall the cruse of oil fail. What was God saying? Hey, just sacrifice a little bit. Now we may look at it and say, well, that was everything. But we know it's just a little cake. Little drink of water. And God's saying, hey, I'm not looking for personality. I'm not looking for all the millionaires. I'm looking for somebody who has a little bit. Willing to give it. See, a little sacrifice in 2 Corinthians or 2 Kings chapter 5, we read about a little maid. It says, Naaman, captain of the host of the king of Syria, was a great man with his master and honorable, and he was mighty in valor, but he was a leper. And the Syrians had gone out by companies and had brought away captive out of the land of Israel a little maid. And notice what she says. She says, oh, would God my Lord were there in Samaria. I know a man of God. Here's a little maid that had a little voice. And it did great things.
God's not asking for you to do this great and mighty things. No, He delights in the little things. He delights when we... Isn't that what He told Saul? When Samuel finally found him, he looked and he says, "Hey, listen, when thou wast little in thine own sight." God's not wanting us to be a big man of God. No, I can be a little mustard seed of faith. Isn't that what He said? Hey, if you had faith as of a little grain of mustard seed, and those of us that were just over there, remember walking through the mustard seed fields? Remember walking through them and you pick them up and you're like, where are they at? Just that small. Grain of mustard seed, that's all you need. Remember the little maid and the woman that gave a little sacrifice? And in John 6, we read about a boy that had a little lunch. He was a little lad. He was a little lad. But guess what? That's what God's looking. God delights in the little things. He delights. You may say, you know what? I don't have a lot to give. God delights in a little thing. You know, our little investment. Most of us, hey, we don't have a lot to give to God. We don't have a lot to offer Him. But God says, hey, put it there. And that little can be turned. And what happened? Isn't that what He told him in our text passage? In Mark chapter 8, He says, hey, what happened when that boy gave me a little bit? There was 12 baskets full. 12 baskets full. Guess what? God wants to feed all that are hungry. And we don't have a lot to offer, but we hand it to God and He multiplies it and blesses it. And all of a sudden, that little bit that we had, we look at God and say, wow, God. And it may be, we look at our children, we say, God, I don't understand. It's going to be hard to do this. It's hard going to be hard in this society and the way the world's going to see our children raised for God. But do the little you can. Do the little you can. And you have time with God and with your children. And you spend time and you deal with those little things. And you take care of those little sins with them. And guess what will happen? God will bless it. Have faith in God. Faith in Him. Some of the greatest men and women of God were considered small or little in their own sight. We sing it, little as much. God is in it. Labor not for wealth or fame. There's a crown and you can win it. You go in Jesus' name. You don't have to be the most educated person in the world to be used of God. You don't have to be the best dressed. You don't have to be the best looking, have the best credentials, be the wealthiest. You have to be willing to give that little bit and turn it over to Him. And close with a simple illustration. I'll use two instruments, a compass and a thermometer. The thermometer and the compass, if you jump in the air and you spin around, and you spin completely around, you know what has happened? You have traveled 360 degrees. Now, when you jumped, you passed every degree. Now, it went fast, but you passed it. When water warms from 32 degrees to 100, it passes every degree, 33, 34, 35, all the way up. Change occurs 1 degree at a time. And as we grow in the Lord, guess what happens? We're changing 1 degree at a time. Sometimes you may not notice the change. Now, when we're little and we're away from somebody for a while, we come back and there's grandma looking at you like, and squeezes you and the big old lips come flapping. Like, no! It's like, oh, you've grown so much. All right? and you run and scream. But guess what? We may have grown a foot since we last saw her, but we grew 1 inch at a time. We didn't all of a sudden, now it may seem like it, with those of us that are trying to keep them pants, you know, from creeping up on them boys. All right, all of a sudden they're walking in and their pants are at their knees. Right, Zeke? But guess what? We grow 1 inch at a time. You know what? If we want to be good at something, let's say it's math or it's science in school, we have to just do today's lesson well and get that down. If we want to memorize a chapter, we can't be overwhelmed by the length of it. We got to work on one sentence. All good skills and qualities come little by little, 1 degree at a time. But the opposite is true. All bad qualities develop 1 degree at a time. The slothful man becomes lazy, one soft choice after another. He may lie in bed 1 minute after the alarm goes off. And tomorrow it may be 1 minute more. Isn't that what it says? Hey, it's just a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands. 1 degree at a time, that intelligent, energetic boy becomes a sloth. There was a man in Oregon who relays a story about himself. He said he was middle-aged and he knew he needed to change. He was starting to get cold towards God, but he was too busy. And 1 degree at a time, his heart was getting cold. He said, he tells the story, his family lived in a tree farm in a travel trailer for a little while. And the thin walls of that trailer allowed them to experience every season of the year. He said they felt the warmth in the summer and they felt the cold in the winter. And one winter was exceptionally cold. And maintaining running water was essential. Throughout the night, they would keep a trickle of water running through the pipes. And he would go into the bathroom and turn on the sink just a slight little bit so that water ran through, because if the pipes froze, oh, they might not have it for months because it would have to thaw and it would just be a mess. The water in the well was about 55 degrees. And if it kept running, pipes were fine. At 2:30 in the morning, one day, he awoke. And usually, he would hear that drip. And he didn't. The water had stopped. He flew out of bed. He threw on some warm clothes and he started running around. He went underneath his trailer and started checking. Then he ran down to the pump. And he couldn't find anything, so he ran back, checked underneath the trailer again. Then he ran back down. He was running like a madman. And one time he stopped and he looked up. Man, it was just a beautiful sky, and it was brilliant, the stars. And when he just looked up, God smote his heart. And God spoke to him and said, "Hey, when your water lines begin to freeze, you jump out of bed immediately. Even in the middle of the night." He said, "Man, it's important for you to have drinking water, isn't it?" He said, "But when the living water freezes, you've been staying in bed and you've been just letting it get colder and colder and colder." And you know what? That's many of us. The physical things get so much of our attention and we just let it go. But spiritually, when our heart is getting cold and it's freezing over and God's saying, "Hey, come on, come close to me and I'll warm it up again and I'll start that fire again." God says, "Hey, just take a step again. Just take a step again. Take care of that little thing and deal with it. And guess what will happen? God delights in little things. He delights in seeing that mustard seed of faith, and it'll grow. Why not take a step tonight towards God? If you delayed a decision, maybe God has been convicting on something in your heart. You let a little sin fester. Start the process now. Don't delay. It may be that you say, I don't have a lot to offer God. It's just a little bit. God delights in that. Bring it to Him and let Him see what He can do. Stand with our heads bowed and eyes closed.